Hey everyone, it's going to be a talk about how we actually can use Ethereum to build not just great things, but really good things for the humanity. And I have today roughly 50 slides and 20 minutes, so it's going to be really fun. So if there's something that you like, you have to be very quick to take a picture. And I know tonight is going to be Rave, so I'm the last speaker here today, so I'm trying to be as efficient as possible. So you can all have your disco nap in later today before Rave. It's a really interesting question is that what is force for good? So what kind of things create positive outputs for the society, for the community and humanity? And I personally have been building here in the Ethereum community for the past 7 years. And I started by building mainly as a hobby and experimentation while I was still in university in Helsinki, Finland, where I'm from. A project that started really just by enthusiasm and became one of the biggest DeFi protocols in our space, and hopefully a technology that is going to be used by everyone. And I think the same way across all these protocols that we're building here together now and in the future. And Ethereum is fascinating because it's a really open design space, so you can really build anything. But the key ingredients is that how you put things together in a way that it creates the output that is beneficial for everyone. And overall, when you think about technology and the purpose of technology and what it really helps, it's about actually lifting the standards of living in our communities and in wider society. So when we go back in history and look at all these technological innovations that we've seen, and they typically tend to compound. So let's say there's innovation in electronics that compounds different types of new innovation. If there's innovation that enables the internet, you have applications and you have access, and that's a compounding innovation. But also in the flip side of the coin is that technology can also do a lot of harm if it's designed in a wrong way or without the certain values as well. So technology can actually also create unequal access, information asymmetry. The more you actually know, the better execution and the better opportunities you can have. It can create worker displacements, pollution, and increase the climate change. So technology always is really neutral to the outputs, and it's up to really the people behind that are building the technology to decide what the outputs are going to be. So decentralized technologies are built in a way that they're accessible and open. And a big question remains is that can these technologies be a force of good that actually can lift up the society and humanity? I believe that Ethereum is a really powerful set of technology, especially because not purely from the technical perspective, but also the choices we have made as a community. Being able to build on an open source stack ensures accessibility, open contributions, and actually access to building these protocols and networks in a way for ourselves to live in that future as well. And the very interesting idea about decentralization is that it really removes the central point of failure or gatekeeping that we've been trusting in society for centuries now. So this is something interesting. Obviously, the internet itself has been built by relying on decentralized technologies. So we have IP protocol, HTTP, different email protocols and then the Ethernet protocol. So the actual internet itself has been built in a decentralized way, but over time became more centralized. And open internet has fostered a lot of innovations over the years, and that innovation is just accelerating over time. And this centralization started more recently, and I would say more 2 decades for now, even though the actual original architecture was more decentralized. And I think what's happened here is that humans and people who were using the internet wanted more accessibility, wanted everything at the same time. It's an open environment to build, but at the same time, we sacrificed ownership over or user experience over ownership. And I think truly after a couple of decades actually living, building on online, we started to effectively gravitate towards decentralized technologies like the blockchain and Ethereum specifically, because that can actually be a game changer. You can bring a lot of those that decentralization into your application level and bring open protocols into the everyday application interfaces. And really main thing about the safeguards is that what we can provide is effectively rules over data ownership, data sharing, neutrality, openness, and security. And security here effectively means the security that the Ethereum as a network provides for different types of applications that have really core functionality, whether it's finance or other types of use cases. And Ethereum by itself, by its design, is censorship resistant. And obviously, that's a spectrum than anything else, because censorship resistance depends on actually the rules we're setting around Ethereum and how we actually prevent centralization within the existing rules, how Ethereum operates. But it also ensures individual freedom, effectively for developers to express with code and build things that makes a better society. And it enables programmable trustless agreements. And I think one of the biggest challenges today is that every day we actually are relying upon agreements. So when we walk on the street, we have an agreement, social agreement, economical agreement, legal agreement that, for example, at a certain point during the day, in the evening, there's going to be lights on the street. We're trusting when we open the faucets in our kitchens that there's going to be water. We have other types of agreements between people that are based on different kinds of norms or legal agreements as well. And Ethereum provides this ability to actually formalize rules that can actually be really good for everyone. This is interesting to think about. When we compare something like how Ethereum and the blockchain has progressed over the years and compare it to something like the internet progression, I think even before going that, we started pretty much with the most basic type of functionality, moving value across different users and trying to tackle one of the most centralized aspect of it, which is the value movements and finance. And over time, obviously, as we had a programmable machine, the Ethereum virtual machine, we were able to actually program different kinds of functionalities that go beyond moving funds from one account to another. So some of you who've been in the space for years now, remember the days of ICOs when capital allocation and capital formation was done in an open way, in based on ideas that got funded. A lot of interesting innovation happened there, and a lot of things that didn't work. And that mimics pretty much how internet started. There was a lot of ideas where that sounded really interesting, but then eventually didn't work. And at the same time, there were ideas that actually worked and became success stories of the whole internet era. And now I think we're moving towards a phase where we're starting to validate a lot of the ideas that actually work on chain. Decentralized finance is one good example where we have a decentralized financial protocols that are functioning well, providing high utility, and at the same time are making also revenue and are organized in decentralized organizations, which is really fascinating concept. And I think we're moving towards a path where we have scalability and we can actually move towards more consumer-facing level. So obviously, Ethereum isn't perfect. It never will be, because we have a lot of programmers here. We have a lot of contributors that are constantly innovating. And the world is constantly changing. And that's the challenge of Ethereum, to keeping up with things that we learn on the way, and also figuring out how Ethereum actually progresses and improves over time as we learn. But one thing is really important to realize is that with scalability and Ethereum transaction costs going down, with scaling, whether it's L2 or the improvements in the actual main architecture on mainnet, we can achieve scale of economics in the sense that the more of these transaction costs are going down, we'll see more actually adoption of the technology. And this happens in every industry as the technology progresses. And obviously, L2s is a really great example of finding a solution how Ethereum could actually scale in a way where we're focusing on getting transaction costs to a minimum and opening the doors to new types of applications. And this is just one kind of like a main scaling strategy that we're seeing at the moment. We're seeing also alternative blockchains, and it's always kind of like interesting to put yourself and Ethereum in competition to other networks and other opportunities that are there to either to use or build. And I think competition in general is healthy. It creates inspiration and creates more innovation. But the main thing why also we are here, because we're maybe thinking that Ethereum has an advantage, something that doesn't exist somewhere else. And I truly believe in that. So first of all, I think Ethereum has the best developer community ever. And I've been part of developer communities outside of the Web3, in Web3. And there's nowhere else so much of energy that really wants to move the space forward, innovate, and actually create something good for the people. There's obviously aspect of being a battle-tested network in the sense that Ethereum has gone ups and downs and has actually been progressing on scalability, but also learned over the time what path to take in the future. And there's ongoing improvements. These improvements are something that we don't see every day necessarily, but there's a lot of work that actually goes into the Ethereum ecosystem and infrastructure improvements over time. And I think more importantly, there's a commitment to decentralization as well. And I would say that's first applications were a lot related to finance, because that was obviously really straightforward use case as blockchains in the first place were trying to solve a financial problem. And for me personally, I basically moved into Finland in my 90s. I grew up there. It was a big recession back in the days, and a lot of unemployment, capital dried up, and I grew up in a society where basically you could feel in families the pain of lack of access to finance and just economical depression. And for me, building financial protocols that create accessibility, transparency, and mitigates what actually banks can do today as a centralized authority has been very important to me. But good question remains on how do we make financial systems accessible to everyone, because we know that there might be still access to finance in Europe and in the Western world, but when we look at the whole landscape globally, we still have quite a big number of unbanked. An unbanked is a team that always circulates across the on-chain innovation, because Ethereum has this unique opportunity where you basically need an internet connection and a device, and you pretty much have a distribution of value at that point. And I think there's been a lot of progress that we have to celebrate as well, especially in the space of stablecoins, as they minimize geographical disadvantages, especially in countries where there's a lot of inflation. Argentina, where I recently visited, and Turkey, and a lot of other countries. And remittances are still a big topic to solve. When we compare traditional banking, we look at what stablecoins can actually offer. That's going to be a big area that's going to move forward. RWAs is a way to actually put value on chain that has been maybe really difficult to achieve and maybe borrow against or monetize. And that's going to be a big category. And social media, I think there is a lot of people using social, and this is a very interesting topic and close to me as well with Lens, especially because centralized platforms own all the data and the connectivity, and there's no ownership at the moment, while all the users are creating actually the value. On-chain puts people first. So everyone has a social capital. They should be able to own it. You should be able to access protocols without middlemen. We actually have technology that can provide true access and fair access and transparency as well. There is definitely other sectors that we haven't touched upon. Supply chain is very interesting. There's still 27 million people in slave labor at the moment. There's a lot that we can do in agriculture, carbon credits, and of course, importantly, when you're thinking about building and use cases, there's a lot of values that you can actually tackle. There's obviously 16 areas that you can focus, and these are the sustainability goals from UN. In most cases, if you're building already on chain, you're actually tackling some of these values. Question if we are moving too slowly. When you compare to the adoption of the internet, you can actually see that the growth that is happening now on chain and within the Ethereum ecosystem is actually in line how we're growing with online. There's a little bit of differences there, but there is significant growth happening, even if you don't feel it every day. We're still very small compared to the bigger pie of the internet users as active users on chain in terms of developers compared to the main Web2 world. But to grow actually from here onwards, events like these are perfect because we're welcoming more developers into Ethereum and build more and expand. And there's challenges when you come and build, learning a new technology, smart contracts, the technology moves fast, tools are moving fast, DAOs are really a new thing, there's not many models. We're still very early in the space, and there's so much to do, actually. There's so much to do, so much to build and contribute. And UX is a big bottleneck. So for UX, we have to do a lot. And I think this is the time, as we have solved scalability and progressed quite a lot on that aspect, being able to have good UX and build good applications that are on-chain is going to be the next chapter. So where we are in the progress of adoption, I think we're somewhere in the middle in terms of the usage if you compare it to the time as internet started to grow. It doesn't feel that it's moving fast, but we're growing. There's more and more users and builders in the space. Polymarket is an interesting example as well, where you can build something that is actually really valuable in terms of information and can predict. We're able to predict election results on chain. We can build anything. It's just about how we imagine and think about it. And I think we're in this moment because we want to shape the future where we want to live in. And we're just getting started. It's very early. I've been here for 7 years, and I feel that there's still 2 decades just to build every fundamental infrastructure and accessibility for users. Thank you.
Thank you, Stani. That was wonderful. Lots to think about. Okay, so we've got 3 minutes for some questions. What is the code?
So the code is force for good.
Okay. As a developer, sometimes it's haunting to tackle the adoption challenge. What are the baby steps we should take if we make financial tools that make use of crypto and apply it to our community?
I think you should always start from the user and actually how you can help by building a product. I think when I was building on Ethereum and even a little bit of today, it started from a lot of the technology side, the protocol aspect. But I think today, if I will build something new, I will start from a product and actually how we can solve a user's problem.
Okay. What's the Avara endgame? How do you want to? Oh, it's gone. Hang on. Okay, let's go to the top one. Oh. How can we protect DeFi from unhealthy incentives schemes and continue growing it as a better financial system?
I think it really depends, obviously, on what we're building. And overall, incentives are an extremely good way of distributing ownership of a system that can be governed by a community with the set rules in the community transparently. That's a big value proposition. That is why the Aave DAO exists, or the Sky DAO exists, or Lido DAO exists, because they're able to create these rules and actually benefit the community and build better outcomes effectively. I think incentives come when there's actually a meaningful traction and a protocol market fit. And that's the place where incentives are more interesting, where it's more about decentralizing a valuable infrastructure that has actually high utility on chain. And the another question about the Avara's endgame. So obviously we started within Aave Labs building DeFi and the Aave protocol. Our end game with Avara is to build a people-powered internet. We think that blockchain is, as a technology, it's use case neutral, meaning that we will see financial use cases, but also Ethereum is going to be used for non-financial use cases as well. And Avara is something that provides access to that infrastructure and these use cases with family and extends with DeFi, with Aave and Go and in social with Lens.
Cool. 25 seconds. As a developer, sometimes it's haunting to tackle... we've done that one, haven't we? Yes. As a builder of both network consumer apps and protocols, what's your view on scaling, improving on L...
Okay, I got it. Yeah.
So let's call it a day. Yeah. Give up. Okay, we're just about finished now.
I think scaling should be a really kind of like a open-ended space. So you should be able, we should be able to see scaling happening within the main architecture of Ethereum in mainnet. I think there should be a lot of innovation happening, which is going to happen. But scaling also should happen on these L2s specifically, and we should keep exploring new ideas and ways to scale beyond what we know today. And this is a ever-ending research topic where developers can actually contribute. I do think that we should apply the exact amount of security that we need based on the use case. DeFi, for example, might need the highest security, where social might need the least amount of security, but some security to enable guarantees for the users.
Okay, we're out of time. Thank you very much, Danny. A big round of applause. That was awesome.
Thank you.